Interlude, The Daughters of Camor. The first true revolution in Camor's criminal affairs came long before Kappa Barsavi. It predated his rise by nearly 50 years, in fact, and it came about entirely as the result of a certain lack of self-control on the part of a pimp called Rude Trevor Vargas. Rude Trevor had a great many other nicknames, most of them used privately in his little stable of whores. To say that he was an intemperate, murderous lunatic would wound the feelings of most intemperate, murderous lunatics. As was often the case, he was a greater danger to his own whores than the marks they plied for coppers and silvers. The only protection he really offered them was protection from his own fists, which could be had by giving him all but a tiny fraction of the money they worked for. One night, a particularly put-upon whore found herself unwilling to participate in his preferred evening diversion, which was to take his pleasure from her mouth while pulling on her hair until she screamed in pain. Her bodice dagger was out before she realized it. She planted it just to the left of Trevor's manhood, in the joint of his thigh, and slashed to his right. There was an awful lot of blood, not to mention screaming, but Trevor's attempts to first fight back and then to flee were greatly hampered by the speed with which his life was gushing out between his legs. His former whore pulled him to the ground and sat on his back to keep him from crawling out of the room. His strength ebbed, and he died in very short order, mourned by exactly no one. The next night, Trevor's kappa sent another man around to take over Trevor's duties. The women in Trevor's old stable welcomed him with smiling faces and offered him a chance to try out their services for free. Because he had a small pile of broken bricks where most people kept their brains, he accepted. When he was neatly undressed and separated from his weapons, he was stabbed to death from several directions at once. That really caught the attention of Trevor's old kappa. The next night, he sent 5 or 6 men to straighten the situation out. But a curious thing had happened. Another 2 or 3 packs of whores had gotten rid of their pimps. A growing nucleus of women claimed a warehouse in the northern snare as their headquarters. The Kappa's men found not 6 or 7 frightened whores, as they'd been told, but nearly 2 dozen angry women who'd seen fit to arm themselves using all the coin they could muster. Crossbows are quite an equalizer, especially at close range, with the advantage of surprise. Those 5 or 6 men were never seen again. So the war began in earnest. Those kappas who had lost pimps and whores attempted to correct the situation, while with every passing day the number of women joining the rebellion grew. They hired several other gangs to serve as their own protection. They established houses of pleasure to their own standards and began to work out of them. The service they offered, in comfortable and well-appointed chambers, was greatly superior to that which could be had from the gangs of whores still run by men, and prospective customers began to weigh in with their coin on the side of the ladies. There was a great deal of blood. Dozens of whores were brutally murdered, and several of their bordellos were burnt to the ground. But for every lady of the night that fell, some kappa's man would get the same. The ladies gave like for like as viciously as any kappa in Camor's history. Less than a year after Rude Trevor's death, the last few pimps clinging brutally to their livelihood were convinced to death in most cases, to give up their fight. An uneasy truce fell into place between the kappas and the city's whores. Eventually, this truce grew into a stable and mutually beneficial arrangement. The whores of the city split amiably into 2 groups, defined by territory. The Doxies took the west side of Camor, while the Gilded Lilies ruled in the east. And both organizations mingled comfortably in the snare, where business was most plentiful. They continued to prosper. They hired loyal muscle of their own and ceased renting cutthroats from other gangs. While their lives could not be deemed pleasant, in light of their trade, at least they were now firmly in control of their own affairs, and free to enforce certain rules of decorum on their customers. They built and preserved a monopoly, and in exchange for promising not to become involved in any other forms of crime, they secured the right to mercilessly crush any attempt to pimp women outside the purview of their 2 gangs. Naturally, some men didn't pay close attention to the rules the women set. They attempted to slap their whores around, or renege on their payments for services, or ignore the standards the ladies set concerning cleanliness and drunkenness. Hard lessons were handed out. As many men learned to their sorrow, it's impossible to be intimidating when one angry woman has your cock between her teeth and another is holding a stiletto to your kidneys. When Vencarlo Barsavi slew his opponents and rose to prominence as the sole cuppa of Camor, even he dared not disturb the equilibrium that had grown between the traditional gangs and the two guilds of whores. He met with representatives from the Doxies and the Lilies. He agreed to let them preserve their quasi-autonomous status, and they agreed to regular payments for his assistance, payments as a percentage of profits, significantly lower than any other dues paid to the cuppa by the right people of Camor. Barsavi realized something that too many men in the city were slow to grasp, an idea that he reinforced years later when he took the Barangius sisters to be his primary enforcers. He was wise enough to understand that the women of Camor could be underestimated only at great peril to one's health.